Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, March 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from DePaul Housing Management, managing communities for seniors throughout the Capital District, on-site staff and campus-like settings. DePaulHousing.com for information on photos. Joining us today is Dr. Alexis Perlmutter from Perlmutter Dermatology, a physician-owned private practice in Del Mar, New York. Dr. Perlmutter specializes in both pediatric and adult dermatology, as well as dermatologic surgery. The number to call here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question about your skin. 800-348-2551. You can also email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. The doctor is in. We'll see you after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday, and with us today is Dr. Alexis Perlmutter, a dermatologist from Perlmutter Dermatology. It's a physician-owned private practice in Del Mar, New York, dedicated to a full spectrum of dermatologic services. This includes medical, surgical, and select cosmetic treatments tailored to individuals of every age. Dr. Perlmutter is dual board certified in dermatology and pediatrics, which means she's extremely patient. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us. voxpop@wamc.org is the email, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Dr. Alexis Perlmutter, great to see you again. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm all right, you know, hanging in there. Hey, how's the practice? To me, it's a new practice, but it's probably been like 2 years now, right?
No, we're coming upon a year in April.
Only one?
Yep.
How's it going over there?
It's going great.
Yeah?
We're busy. I have a PA working with me, so we're just growing and we're still taking new patients. We've been in the Del Mar area for, again, 11 and a half months now, so we've been doing great.
Very nice. And do you work the PA like a dog?
No? No, he's wonderful.
He's not resenting you yet?
No, he wants more patients, so
really?
He's eager. Yeah, he's a hard worker, so he likes...
So you're still accepting patients?
Yeah.
It's pretty rare these days, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly, yeah.
Dr. Alexis Perlmutter is our guest today. It's dermatology, and if you have a topic you want to bring up, this is the time. Otherwise, we'll zip right into the emails. You don't?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I thought you meant that you're talking to the listeners.
No, if you have a topic...
Oh, no, no.
Okay.
Nothing. I'm ready.
All right.
Bring it on.
Here we go with an email from Gail. I have received injections into areas on my leg for the treatment of psoriasis. In the past, I've had excellent, long-lasting results, clear for years. My last injection was done in December. The sites affected vary in size, but all areas injected have some skin discoloration, which I assume will fade over time. About 4 weeks ago or so, very dark bruising suddenly occurred at these sites. My dermatologist suggested using Arnica. It helps, but the bruising keeps recurring. The area can look fairly clear except for the discoloration 1 hour and totally bruised the next. What could be causing this, and could anything be done to prevent it?
There's a lot to tackle.
There's
that,
another
that question,
but I'm going to wait until you answer. Well, the final question was, would taking Arnica supplement be better than topically applying it?
Okay. So the first part of the question is that she's getting, or he or she is getting injections for psoriasis. So I have to assume that's Kenalog. And Kenalog, or any injection really, is administered via a needle. So anytime you're poking skin, you have, you know, you risk the chance of disrupting a blood vessel and creating bruising. I imagine that's what's happening here. Although it sounds like things have changed lately. So there could be some other change in her health that's giving her more, you know, a higher risk of bruising, such as now being on a blood thinner. In general, as we get older, our collagen bundles thin a bit. So we're more prone to getting bruising after any kind of trauma to the skin, especially on the lower legs.
Yeah.
So, again, without really knowing why she's bruising more.
Yeah.
I think she could, one, is consider a different treatment for psoriasis. There are so many new options out there. And the injection of Kenalog, which, again, is what I'm assuming she's getting, has already gone a little bit out of favor because of some of these problems. So color change, bruising.
So this is not unknown.
No. And with chronic injections, you can kind of exceptionally thin the skin there. So you want to maybe consider a different option. But also, you know, you might just accept that you might bruise longer these days.
You know, and we have no idea how old or young Gail is, but, you know. Psoriasis, I thought this was an autoimmune thing.
We like to say it's immune-mediated. Autoimmune, we kind of like to reserve that term for when we know the exact antibody that's attacking the organ we're talking about. So in psoriasis, it's too complex to sort of call it autoimmune, but we call it immune-mediated. And yeah, it absolutely is. It's immune mediated. There's so many different immunologic players in the genesis of that disease. So that's why Kenalog, which is a steroid and anti-inflammatory, is used.
You know, but by the way, is there a new state of the art that goes beyond steroids? I mean, it seems steroids have been the thing for a long time.
It's basically the panacea of many different inflammatory conditions. But psoriasis has come so far, even in the past, I'd say 5, 6, 7 years. So there's more targeted immune therapies, which are also injectables. I'll just say the general classes, so it's not to name any specific drugs.
You can name them as long as you're not on their payroll.
No, not. But there's IL-23 blockers, there's IL-17 blockers, there's probably 5 or 6 in those categories alone, which are more targeted immune therapies that do a really great job clearing psoriasis.
Okay, we had an email here. We might as well just go to this one now. This is from XXX. Draw your own inference. Please discuss psoriasis relationship to arthritis.
Oh, that's a good question. So, just like if anyone's heard of, I'm trying to think of a good example, sarcoidosis. Maybe it's not the best example because it's not that common, but that's a specific illness where there's several organs that are targeted by the illness. So like the lungs, the heart, the skin, they can all be targeted. So in psoriasis, there's a high correlation with psoriatic arthritis, meaning they're kind of two independent diseases, but they travel together. Mm. And the same inflammation that can cause trouble on the skin or similar inflammation can cause trouble in the joints. So it's not one and the same. Not everyone with psoriasis gets the arthritis, and vice versa. If you have the arthritis, you don't necessarily get the skin disease.
And what is... hang on. I was so confused, but now I lost the email. Arnica? What is that? You said it's a vitamin? I've never heard of
it. It's a naturally occurring, like a plant-derived substance, and there is definitely some evidence for it as a... as a mitigator of bruising.
Okay, you learn something new every day. We are joined by Dr. Alexis Perlmutter today from Perlmutter Dermatology in Del Mar. This one from Marion. Is it safe to use over-the-counter products to remove skin tags, or is it better left to a doc? If using such a product at home, what precautions do I need to take?
So I'm, of course, a little bit biased.
A little bit? No, go to the doctor.
Exactly. But when it comes to skin tags, I actually tell my patients all the time, if they're like little and they're in the armpits where you're not that worried about maybe getting a scar if you do it yourself, you can just do it yourself.
If they're on your armpit,
yeah.
If you're not a model, why wouldn't you just leave it be?
Well, some people will groom the armpits with shaving or...
Wouldn't the shaver just take it off?
Maybe. Okay. Maybe, though, it just cuts a little bit of it and so it recurrently bleeds, right?
All right.
Other times, people, when they sweat in their armpits or they put on deodorant, it kind of collects on the tag and they don't like that feeling. Yeah.
Okay, let's just move on. There's another email here, and this one's from R. in Newburgh. I'm wondering if it's efficacious to use products that claim to reduce dark circles under the eyes, or can one never get rid of them?
So that's a hard one, meaning there are so many products out there that are purported to help this problem, and most of the time there's very little we can do with over-the-counter products. So
no, what do you mean there's very little we can do?
Very little we can do. They mostly don't work.
Ah, why are they allowed to sell them?
Well, they're not FDA approved, right? So it's just, it's sort of like makeup. They can say anything they want. They're not regulated by the FDA.
So I can make a lotion and put it on the TV?
Yeah.
Done.
The biggest reason we see like circles under the eyes are because of a structural change as we get older, where there's like a band. This is more actually the eye anatomy. There's a band just under the eye. So it looks like the lower eyelid, although people think of it as their upper cheek, and that relaxes with age, creates a little bit of a puffing effect, and then below that you get a shadow. Ah. So the number one reason we have it is just mechanical changes as we get older.
So this is the same as eye bags? Is this the same exact thing?
Yep.
Got to be honest with you. I know I'm a grumpy. They call me Uncle Grumpy, and I despise it. But I'm so sick and tired of all these products for bags under the eyes. It's all I see on TV.
Yeah.
When did men start caring about that?
Probably a while ago, Ray. It's been a thing for
really
a couple decades. Yeah, yeah. But I think we're just more aware of it. I mean, I think it's related to the advent of using technology to be, you know, visible when you're doing meetings, and people just assume they're going to call their friends on FaceTime, or I'm sure that's completely outdated. They do something else to make
calls.
Oh, no,
I've still seen my family doing the FaceTimes. Yeah. So
but, you know, there people are more visible because of the internet and social media, and so they want to look good.
Okay. Well, I mean, you could just filter it and blur
that's
yourself
true.
Like Barbara Walters used to do. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll hit the phones. It's Dr. Alexis Perlmutter. It's Dermatology Today, 800-348-2551. We'll take a brief sojourn to Hernando's Hideaway, yeah? That's Billy May and the orchestra there. Hernando's Hideaway, 800-348-2551. Medical Monday today with Dr. Alexis Perlmutter. And let's jump right to the phones. There's Helen and Troy, and then there's Ellen and Troy. Hello, Ellen, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Vaguely, go ahead.
I'll turn it up.
What?
You know me, Ray. It's Ellen.
Oh, hi.
You hear me now?
Yeah, I mean, you're better on a handset, but if you must be on speaker, just project. Speak from the diaphragm.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, very good. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that.
You got it.
Okay, so this is my question. I swim, so I'm giving you the conditions. I swim every morning, and I walk all the time, and I've been applying all kinds of different lotions and things like this because my feet get so dry all winter. Any advice? I get the best remedies, but nothing seems to really satisfy it.
So that's a good question. It's a common issue we have in upstate New York because of our dry winters. It's not so much the cold that gets to us, it's the dryness. So it's the humidity. And this past year, for example, in December, the humidity really dropped. You're adding to the problem, on the skin at least, by getting them wet in pools, right? So that's a good thing to do for your health, of course, but that's really a dehydrating event for the skin.
Really?
Yeah. Anytime the skin gets wet.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah. So, and the chlorine's an irritant. So what I would recommend is really the keys is what you're going to do at bedtime, and that is to put something really greasy and hydrating on the skin. So something like Vaseline.
And like wear socks.
And yep, exactly. And something like a sock over.
I've been using Nivea that I got at Ralph's Market in Albany, which is a very good product.
It's a good product, but the greasier we go, the more hydrating it is. So something that's either greasier or oily.
Okay.
So something like oils, natural oils, coconut oil.
What about butter?
Butter,
couple pounds of butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, really.
Come on, Ellen, butter up.
340.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
That's the best.
Yeah, it really
okay,
is.
So you just have to really keep at it.
Yep. And then after you are done at the pool, you want to put something like Nivea or some kind of moisturizer or lotion on right away.
I do.
But the key is nighttime.
Okay.
Yeah. You have to keep at it.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ellen, thanks a lot for the call. You know, when my kids were little, babies and infants, toddlers, Aquaphor, that was what they, you know, and so that is just, Vaseline, basically, right?
Aquaphor is actually, it's mostly Vaseline, petroleum jelly, and then it has lanolin in it, which is like the secret ingredient.
Really?
Lanolin is super thick, super, super thick, and then there's some mineral oil in Aquaphor as well, so it's thicker than Vaseline.
You know, we've had this talk before about covering yourself in greasy stuff. You don't do that, though, right?
Sometimes. I mean, depending on the weather, yeah, Vaseline, petroleum jelly, coconut oil, yeah.
Does your family mock you mercilessly?
The kids protest aggressively.
Oh, you make them do it too?
Well, they have dry skin as well. So when they really get, you know, we've all seen the dry winter hands.
Oh, yeah.
Especially post-COVID with all the washing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's when you get a lot of protesting.
And during the pandemic, when everybody was using that stuff on their hands 28 times a day. Everybody's hands were just brittle.
Exactly. I think that's when every person could finally understand what some people still are getting, you know, every winter, which is that just that irritation from water and from sanitizers, from soaps. That's a great example of how we all know that really all that kind of really just the washing is so hard on skin.
That's so funny. Now, the last time you were on, you mentioned, you know, showering every day, especially in winter, not the best idea. So I ran this idea past my daughters. It didn't go over that well. It was a veto right away. Let's go to Saratoga. And Jessica, you're on.
Hi. I have two young kids with moderate and severe eczema. And I heard, I think it was you last month, mentioning that UV light, I think UVB light might be a treatment for eczema, but I wasn't sure if that was for kids, approved in kids.
I don't think that was you, doctor. Somebody else might have mentioned that, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. It might have been somebody else.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you knew anything about that. We've tried so many things, steroid creams, and I just had never heard of light therapy for eczema.
Yep. So I'm going to quickly say that I'll talk about one other therapy that's a little bit newer, although it's been approved for probably about a decade now. But going back many decades, narrowband UVB, which is generated in these full-scale light boxes where the individual, including kids, stand in the light box. They usually protect certain parts of their body. So they might protect, you know, they wear their undies, and they definitely will put goggles on to protect their eyes. But they usually will get their entire body treated for short increments of time, and it really, really does help. It helps with systemic skin or widespread skin conditions such as eczema, atopic dermatitis, psoriasis, some other more, you know, unique ones like pityriasis, rosea, but there's others. But the bottom line is that it's a really well-utilized treatment option for kids because there's no medicine, right?
So this is UVB.
Yeah. Narrowband UVB, I think if I remember correctly, it's the 311 wavelength, a nanometer wavelength, and it's been well shown in studies to be therapeutic and really not that much exposure to UV.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. Well, Jessica, thanks a lot and good luck with that. I know that my brother had terrible eczema when he was maybe 8 to 15, and it sort of went away after a while. Is that common?
Yeah, atopic dermatitis, which is like basically genetic eczema, the one you have. It's not from a cause, let's say. It's not like you're allergic to something. It usually starts before the age of 5 and usually gets better by the end of your teen years. Not gone, but it does improve usually a lot by the end of your teen years.
We are joined today by Dr. Alexis Perlmutter. It's Dermatology Today, 800-348-2551. And VoxPop at WAMC.org for the email. We'll get back to the email bag in a little bit. Let's go to Marie in Albany. Marie, you're on.
Hey, I was going to call. I have basically a similar question about the UVB. I have psoriasis, and my dermatologist was like, well, if this shampoo isn't working, maybe you should switch to taking some sort of pill, like they now have psoriasis pills. And I was like, but then my hairdresser was like, why don't you just get one of those red light things? So I'm wondering if there's a way to avoid the pill and try the light therapy.
Okay, before you answer that, before you answer that question, we talked about the potions and lotions and snake oil that's on TV. Another thing we're seeing a lot of is, you know, the hats with the lights and everything. There are a lot of various products.
Yeah.
Some of them, I assume, are not working that well. But tell us what really does work.
Mm-hmm. So for psoriasis, with light, with any kind of light, there's such a broad range of light, right? The electromagnetic spectrum. And we have ultraviolet, you have narrowband UV. You have not just narrowband. That's what we were talking about. That's what we use in a therapeutic way in medicine. There's also UVA, which we used, but it's not commonly used anymore. So the most commonly one studied and utilized for inflammatory skin conditions is narrowband UVB. That's in the 311 wavelength. Mm. So the red light has not been shown to be efficacious for psoriasis or eczema. And so I do not recommend doing that. And also, we don't really know. It may not just be not efficacious, but we don't know the repercussions of using that because it's never been studied in large groups for psoriasis. So it may not only not be effective, it might actually be harmful. So I definitely recommend looking into UVB, but that would have to be administered by a doctor's office.
Okay. Thank you.
Marie, thanks a lot for the call. So the UV that gives us alligator skin and terrible sunburns, which one is that?
They both do, actually. So UVA is, they're both responsible for, UVA and UVB are the most common ones that we like to implicate in dermatology. UVC adds a little bit to our sun damage, our skin damage too. But the way I like to remember, it's just easier for people to remember too, is UVB gives you the burn. And we're talking about all the wavelength of UVB. UVA is not going to give you a burn, but it's kind of like responsible for the after effect when you get sun damage days later or weeks and months later.
Yeah.
But the two contribute together for chronic sun damage.
So this is so interesting. I could geek out now because you said narrow band UVB, which you said was at 311 nanometers.
Yep.
Okay. And presumably then there's a broad spectrum UVB and that's where the trouble is?
It's more that when you have the best way to say it is if you have even uncontrolled amounts of 311, you're going to get in trouble too.
Oh, interesting.
The idea is just that the, in creating a bulb that only delivers 311 and then you do it for short increments, you're controlling the amount of damage. The more range of nanometers, right, so UVA, UVB, UVC spectrum, the more you're going to have trouble. So it's a combination of how much range of UV and then also how much of it delivered.
How did they research that and come up with that? Okay, a small dose of 311, very narrow band is going to be okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's grab a call or two. Well, several more before the next break. We'll go to Colony. It's Marie. Hello, Marie.
Hi, good afternoon. I just was recently in Florida. Hadn't had much sun exposure for a long time. When I returned, I had two spots on my face that were raised and, you know, were rough. After a while, they went down, reduced. Is that an indication of anything that I should really have looked at?
So it would be really hard for me to say definitively without seeing them, but a really common thing that can happen that all day I see this is people get spots that are kind of what you described, rough and brown. They kind of pop up out of the blue and then they can kind of peel off or go down. And those are most likely these benign growths we call seborrheic keratoses. But you can imagine where I'm coming from, right? So any new dark spots on the skin when you've been in the sun, you've got to wonder if they're okay. And I really wouldn't be able to say that without seeing them.
Okay. Yeah, I was really concerned because it appeared to be the sun that caused them to come out. So I didn't know if they were dormant and now were more of a problem. But appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Alexis Perlmutter is our guest today. It's Dermatology on Vox Pop Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is the number. And let's go to Matamoros, Pennsylvania. It's Jim. Hello, Jim.
All right. I think the Perniculus Birdie commercials are outweighing the under-eye bag things.
Okay, well, maybe.
The question is, can old wounds become metaplastic or anaplastic?
Can old wounds
metaplastic or anaplastic?
Okay. What do you think, Doug?
So that's a good question. There are some case reports of scars, which are, you know, I think that's what you mean by an old wound, like a scar tissue. Developing squamous cell skin cancers in them. I guess the answer is yes. It's really uncommon, though, especially in the absence of repeat trauma to that area or an underlying skin condition such as psoriasis. You're more likely to grow squamous cell skin cancers in psoriasis, especially in scars. So I think if you just had an injury that was seemed to be this sort of lying dormant many years later, you'd be fine.
All right, Jim. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dr. Alex Perlmutter is our guest. Mike in Saratoga Springs writes, with summer just around the corner. Hang on, let me say that again. I like the sound of that.
It's optimistic.
With summer just around the corner, I spend a lot of time outside playing disc golf. Can you recommend what I should be wearing as far as sunblock? I'm in my mid-60s, so my skin has been around a while. And that's from Mike in Saratoga.
Yes, that's a great question, given the time of year
we're
in. So in general, we dermatologists recommend that people cover up their skin with an SPF of 50 or higher, especially between the hours of 10 and 2. That's when the sun's strongest. And that you reapply every 2 hours, so every 120 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
That's
it does
a lot.
Wear off. If you read the fine print on sunscreens, they all say it. This will wear off some 90 minutes, some 120, and usually after sweating or water exposure.
Going to the ocean is very difficult with that. This year I'm wearing shirts and pants.
That's wonderful.
Is that a good idea?
Yes, that's great.
You know, you look at those old pictures and everybody has
full garb.
Nobody had skin problems, yeah?
I thought about putting one of those pictures, those old-fashioned paintings in my waiting room.
Like
from the 1800s where everyone's covered head to toe at the beach.
Right, except for their heads.
True.
You know? They would have to put some lard on there. What would you put on your head in the old days to block it?
I think they would wear bonnets. I don't know the answer.
They didn't swim, though, I don't think.
Don't
they just went to the beach and walked around.
All right. Well, I have to have some work to do, right? So I'll work on your face.
Okay, fair enough.
Cover head to toe.
Let's go.
Otherwise.
We'll grab another couple here before we take a break. Dr. Alexis Perlmutter is our guest today. We'll go to Rochester and Marie, another Marie. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You bet.
I wondered if you could discuss psoriasis and the rebound effect of exposing, for instance, my legs to the sun, and then it really comes back badly, or it seems to. And also tanning booths, whether they're a good idea.
This is a theme today. This is a great question.
Yeah, a lot of psoriasis.
Psoriasis gets better in sunlight. And that's because sunlight has lots of different wavelengths of light in them, and some of them work as anti-inflammatory effects on the skin, just like we were talking about earlier with the narrowband UVB. So usually if you get just a little bit of sun, that does help psoriasis go away. But psoriasis is well known to come out more if the skin is traumatized. So like if you have a wound or you get a tattoo, a lot of people who have underlying psoriasis say, oh, my psoriasis got worse right there. And so you can imagine if you get too much sun, that's a big stressor on the skin, like a burn. And so your psoriasis might come out more in that setting. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Tanning booths do help psoriasis, but I don't want to say that. So everyone cover your ears, but they do help psoriasis.
Do they really?
Yeah, but they also put the rest of your skin at risk for skin cancers. So we recommend, again, seeing doctors who have UVB machines and getting them involved and having them help you treat your skin with light as opposed to doing it in a tanning bed.
I think you're safe, Marie, because you won't see the sun in Rochester until about July. So I think you'll probably be all right.
Exactly. It's been a terrible winter for just that.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. If you did go to a tanning booth, which I've never done, believe it or not, do you put sunscreen on before you go in?
Would I?
No, should one do that?
Well, I think that defeats the purpose of why most people are going. But yeah, I would recommend that. But I think I went once as like a teenager, so I don't know how it works now. But then it was like you pay for the minutes. So my guess is people today wouldn't want to do that because then they're kind of wasting their money.
But I mean, when you go to the beach, like I'll put a sunscreen on, I'll still get a tan.
Yep. Yes, if you want to be safer in the tanning booths, you should wear sunscreen. I almost can't believe I'm saying this out loud. Don't go to tanning booths. It's really bad
for
your skin.
Okay. Well, there's an email from Kim who says, I'm a 60-year-old female who's had a lot of sun exposure over the years and have developed a dark, rough, round spot on my jaw. How can I get rid of it? I've been using essential oils like lavender and tea tree oil.
So there can be several different types of brown spots, growths that come out because of sun. So it's hard to say carte blanche what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called melasma, which is a very common reason people get like a darkened color from chronic sun.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also just what we call lentigines, like the brown spots that if you guys can picture your grandma's hands when they were...
Just look at my head for a minute.
Those little dark spots on the back of the hands are liver spots. Or they're
Are they really liver spots or was it just an old... person saying that?
I think I've read somewhere that they were called that because that's the color of the liver, like a brownish, greenish tan.
So yeah. Old people were looking at a lot of livers. All right, fine.
So in general, though, if you have something like that in that world, so, you know, if this is a mole, for example, this would not work what I'm about to say. But generally speaking, there's some creams you can get prescribed that have hydroquinone in them, and those are lightening agents. And even more effective often are peels and laser treatments. Mm. So there's a lot that we can do for brown spots that come up on the skin related to sun. But the exact treatment would have to be tailored by the, you know, the practitioner who's looking at the skin and figuring out what's going on.
All right, let's grab one more call, Dr. Alexis Perlmutter. One more call before the break. We have plenty of time left, so if you're on hold, hang in there. We'll go to Marty in Kingston. Marty, you're on.
Yes, hi, Ray and Dr. Perlmutter.
Hi.
I'm a skier in the Catskills, and I try to protect my skin and always use a little Vaseline. When you mentioned Vaseline, that's when it clicked. Is that a good remedy, or do you have something else to suggest against the wind and the moisture and the cold?
Yep. So Ray knows I love Vaseline. Most dermatologists
do. Yeah, absolutely.
It's cheap. It's easy. You know, it works. I think that we talk about this with sunscreen, how clothing's even better. And similarly, when it comes to environmental stressors like wind and the cold and also some sun, right? When you're skiing, some days up here we have some sun. The physical barrier, so like a neck warmer, some kind of, you know, a cloth protectant is even better. But Vaseline's pretty much as good as you can get.
There you go. Marty, you want to follow up real fast?
Right. And Ray, if you produce a under-the-eye bag remover, I'll buy it.
Fair enough.
And Dr. Perlmutter, my grandmother had a sunbrella. She would go out in the sun, not with a rain umbrella, but with a sunbrella to get protected from the skin.
Love it.
All right. Now, thanks, Marty. If I'm coming up with my own potion, can we work bourbon into it at all? No, maybe not. All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Dr. Alexis Perlmutter joins us today. Many more questions. We'll get to a bunch from the email bag in a moment. Count Basie and the orchestra, Neil Hefti chart there, After Supper on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Alexis Perlmutter is our guest today. Mike in Richmond writes, could you please go through a differential for folliculitis? My 90-year-old mother is being treated for it. Oh. Non-responsive to doxy. Doctor, considering a course of cephalosporin. Your thoughts? I sound things out. Cephalosporin. Your thoughts? She's very itchy, especially at night, even with steroid creams. And that's from Mike in Richmond.
That's good. That's good. Helpful to know her symptoms. So folliculitis, which is just inflammation of the hair follicle, which we've all probably had that before. It's like a little ingrown hair in your head.
Oh, yeah.
Scalp folliculitis. It kind of looks like acne. But there can be gram-positive organisms that cause it, and that's classically treated by the medicines you were referring to. And then there's such thing as gram-negative folliculitis, means like it's a germ, it's a bacteria that's not going to respond to doxycycline, I think, or cephalosporins, because some cephalosporins treat gram-negatives, but generally speaking, it wouldn't respond to that. But I think what she might have is called spirosporum folliculitis, and that's a yeast form that causes folliculitis and would not respond to an antibiotic. It's usually itchy, and it looks just like bacterial folliculitis, but it's itchy, and it's pretty common on the trunk. So for that, usually you need an antifungal, actually. It's super, super common, and, you know, it really would not get better with the therapies you were mentioning. So to know for sure, you can scrape it and look for fungus, but you might also have to do a biopsy.
Okay.
You can always have her start with antifungal washes, like Head and Shoulders has a little bit of antifungal effect. start with that. But really to treat it, if it is a fungal folliculitis, you need to have a medicine by mouth like fluconazole.
All right, fair enough. This is from Barry, who was a bass player, so be nice to him. I have the occasional skin tag here and there, but one has cropped up on my neck right where I shave with a safety razor. Seems that the razor has never damaged the skin tag, but if my razor does slice it one day, and aside from temporary bleeding, which I assume will happen, are there any other repercussions? Should I bother to have it removed? It itches a little bit, but aside from that, it doesn't bother me.
I don't think he has to have it treated if that's the case. No, so actually we started this topic earlier.
We did.
If you have skin tags and you want to take them off yourself, you just want to clean the area, you want to sterilize scissors or a razor blade, and you just cut it. You know, it there'll be some bleeding. Skin tags tend to bleed a lot despite their small size.
Yeah.
So you just hold pressure. Of course, the caveat is if they're big, you might not want to slice it because it might bleed a lot.
This is a scary one, and I'm not sure this is dermatology or something else. This is from Jeff and Troy. Since Christmas, all the hair on my 30-year-old daughter's head has fallen out. It has been determined that her vitamin D is extremely low. It's also been determined that she does not have alopecia. Her primary care physician has recommended her seeing a dermatologist. How might a dermatologist assist with a condition like this?
So that's definitely dermatology. So we technically, dermatologists take care of the hair, the skin, and the nails. So yeah, this sounds like a serious situation. And very much a dermatologist would be, I think, of aid here. There are, alopecia just means hair loss. So there's probably about 15 different hair losses that can be diagnosed, all different causes. So vitamin D, usually that being low, a lot of us walk around with a low vitamin D in upstate New York, but that probably would not cause all the hair to fall out. So there are autoimmune causes. There's psoriasis can cause alopecia. Lupus can cause alopecia. Hormonal changes can cause alopecia. Anemia can cause alopecia. Stress can cause alopecia. There's so many reasons why she might have that. So definitely needs to see a dermatologist.
That's got to be traumatic, though. 30 years old, all your hair drops out in 2 months. That's not fun. Let's go back to our phones. Dr. Alexis Perlmutter joins us today from Perlmutter Dermatology in Del Mar. We'll go to Poughkeepsie. And Emily, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a question for the doctor. So it's about, I have a lot of eczema and all the skin problems you can imagine. And recently this winter, my hands have been so itchy and painful. When I went to the dermatologist, she prescribed me a steroid cream.
Okay.
And she gave me the steroid cream. I used it. Most of the problems were around my cuticles, like my nail beds. They were swollen, itchy. I was getting blisters on my fingers. I thought it could be something like chilblains because I have bad circulation. So I put the steroid cream on. I used it for a week. And now the tops of my hands, like my opposite my palms, they're raw. They're red. I'm putting Vaseline cream on them. But every time they get wet, cold or hot water, it's burning.
Okay.
And I don't know what to do to help heal it because I can't avoid washing my hands when I'm out.
All right. Something went a little wrong with your connection, but I think Dr. Perlmutter has the gist.
So I definitely recommend going back to the doctor. But in the meantime, anything that's cream or lotion based is going to burn. And so remember we were talking earlier about greasy things.
Yeah.
So something like Vaseline Aquaphor, you're going to want to put on in large quantities. There are such things as steroid creams made as ointments. So in this scenario, if you came in to see me, I'd probably prescribe, I'd have to look at you, of course, but end up prescribing something in an ointment form, maybe a steroid, because anything creamy or lotion is going to burn, like you said. Chilblains doesn't tend to itch that much. So I don't know if that makes a lot of sense. There is such a thing, you can look it up, as dyshidrotic eczema, dyshidrotic, which is a blistery, itchy kind of eczema that usually occurs around the sides of the fingers. It sounds a little more like that to me. But either way, stick with the ointments for now, and I would call your doctor.
Okay, thank you so much, doctor.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Emily. 800-348-2551. We go to, let's see, who's been waiting the longest here? Looks like John and Troy. John, you're on. Nope, that's Walter in Springfield. John, you'll be next. Go ahead, Walter.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
The question I have goes along the lines with hair follicles that you've been discussing and light. Specifically, you see all these advertisements for shaving alternatives, the use of, I think they're laser lights, but I was wondering what the safety and efficacy of these home devices for, I guess, depilatory, is that the proper word, for making it so the hair doesn't grow back and you don't need to shave anymore, whether it's under your armpits or wherever else anybody is using these things, who knows?
Okay.
So a really good question. Admittedly, I don't know the extent of that market, meaning if they're not FDA approved, which, you know, if they're selling them over the counter, they're probably not FDA approved for hair removal or depilatory purposes. One thing that definitely works is the Alexandrite laser, which is a laser that's used for removal of hair. That is usually in the hands of, you know, someone who knows what they're doing there. So either a practitioner, a doctor, a PA, and we were talking wavelengths before. So that's the 755 wavelength, and that actually targets the hair follicle. So that does prevent hair growth. It usually takes 7 or 8 sessions. Again, I can't comment too much on the over-the-counter lasers, mostly because if they're not FDA approved, I haven't personally dove into them too much to know their safety or efficacy. So okay. I apologize.
Well, thanks a lot, Walter. Now we'll go to John and Troy. John, you're on with Dr. Alexis Perlmutter.
Hi, I'm 70 years old. I was born with ichthyosis, and it was really terrible when I was a kid. I was itchy all night when I was trying to sleep, and it got better for a while, and now it's gotten worse, and I'm itchy again. Also, I'm diabetic. And I've got stage 4 chronic kidney disease, and I'm getting dialysis 3 days a week. So,
oh boy.
I mentioned that because it's all related, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I do for my ichthyosis, specifically for the itchiness?
So, John, I mean, you know your skin because you've had ichthyosis your whole life. So ichthyosis can cause itch, of course, like you said. So can the other two things. And actually, the stage 4 kidney disease requiring dialysis is really a pretty remarkable cause of itch in patients, one that is, you know, intractable. You're just go crazy with it. And in that case, there's not really anything on the skin. So one first step to tease this out is to sort of look at your skin and say, does it look like my ichthyosis is worse or not? If the itch is clearly related to changes on the skin that look like ichthyosis, you know, we haven't really come that far with ichthyosis management and itch, meaning we still recommend hydrating. We recommend you can mix in some topical steroids at low doses with your moisturizers to help cut down on the itch. Mm. Some patients will take something like antihistamines. Hydroxyzine is a sedating antihistamine that a lot of people will take in the evening if they're really itchy and they you know, they really can't get relief.
What was the name of that?
Hydroxyzine. It's a prescription. It's like okay. Benadryl, but prescription. So meaning it's an antihistamine, but with sedating properties, and it can help if you're really itchy.
Okay.
I was taking ammonium lactate for a few years, but I have ichthyosis over my entire body. And the insurance company eventually wondered why I was getting so much ammonium lactate.
So amlactin is also available over the counter. You don't need a prescription for it, so it's obviously not as cheap that way. But that will help exfoliate off the dry skin, right? A humidifier in your bedroom would help. You can try Sarna as well. Sarna is an over-the-counter lotion that has pramoxine in it, and pramoxine has good data behind it to help with itch.
All right, John, thank you and good luck. You know, you brought up the humidifier, and in this part of the world where the heat is on so much, do you run humidifier in your house?
Well, we have lots of HVAC systems now have a dial in there so you can dial up humidity in your own home. So ours has that in there. definitely recommend looking into that. You may not even know you have one on your HVAC system. So yeah, it's sort of part of the air that's pumped out.
I think I'd know if it's on my system. Carol says, I'm on medication for cancer that causes nail issues, splitting, ridging, etc. They're looking really nasty right now. Any recommendations on what I could do? I do moisturize using Aquaphor, Cerave, and Gold Bond with aloe. Any other suggestions? And that's from Carol.
Two other things. So one is, definitely I'm glad you're moisturizing, but one other option you can use is urea creams have an exfoliative property, and they can help almost like chemically file down the nails. They have uric acid in them. So if you just sort of Google that or Amazon that, you can see a bunch of different creams.
Fair enough.
The other option is when you're starting to split, they have these polishes that can help hold the glue together. So like it's really just a clear nail polish. So that can help too.
Fair enough. Let's go to Deborah in Scotia. Deborah, you're on.
We're back to the sun screening issue. I'm curious as to whether the clothing companies that advertise for, sun protective clothing like shirts and pants and things, or is it just a gimmick? Because if you cover up, you cover up. But then there are these specialty items, and I wasn't sure if there's really something different about them that would make them more resistant to, sun damage or having it hit your body.
So that's a great question. I'm happy the sun protective clothing industry exists because it's made it a little bit more ordinary to cover up, right? It's marketed the idea of covering up your skin with clothing. But to your point, I'm going to make a comment about the old-fashioned farmer's tan. We've all heard of the farmer's tan, right? And that's some farmer wearing a T-shirt, and then they get the tan where the T-shirt isn't. So that in studies, those cotton-woven old-fashioned T-shirts are shown to be equivalent of an SPF of 7. And most of the sun protective clothing has a UPF of 50. It's the same idea. It's just protective from clothing, not chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in reality, they're pretty equivalent. So the sun protective clothing, yes, it's the weave. It's supposed to be better than any other material. But I honestly think if you've got something covering your skin, unless it's like a light linen, which clearly is letting sun rays through, I think you're just fine.
That's so interesting. Deborah, thanks for the call. I recall back during the Reagan administration. I believe, and maybe even before that, Dr. Edward Teller, father of the H-bomb, said cotton is a really good block for radiation. And what's the sun?
Wow.
Radiation,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, but he also said if you stood behind a tree during an atomic bomb blast, if the tree was in the right spot, you'd be fine.
Oh, jeez.
That's a different show, alas. Let's go to John in Schenectady. John, you're on with Dr. Alexis Perlmutter.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just actually wanted to make a comment, which is that 20 years ago, I'd had a mole on my abdomen that itched occasionally. I went to my GP, and, he looked at it, and he said it doesn't match any of the markers of cancer, that it's just like one of my other, many other moles. And, I told him I wasn't happy with it, so he sent me to a dermatologist who told me the same thing. So I go back to my GP and said, can you just take it out? He took it out, called me back 2 weeks later, said, I'm sorry, you're right, we were wrong. It's a malignant melanoma. And
oh, boy.
And I was going to have to get a lot more surgery. So I did. Well, that was 20 years ago, and I don't have any recurrence since. But, it could have killed me if we didn't do anything about it.
All right. So is that a question for Dr. Perlmutter?
No, really just advice for people to advocate for themselves.
I like that. Okay.
Whenever they feel something wrong, do something about it. So
absolutely.
Okay. Fair enough. Hey, thanks a lot, John. Appreciate the call. And we're almost out of time here with Dr. Alexis Perlmutter. Diane writes in, I'm 79. My scalp has been starting to show through. Is there any benefit to the vitamin complex products, or are those just a way to make me think I'm doing it?
That's a great question. I get that question a lot. So we'll tackle that one. So usually we think of when men bald or lose hair as they get older, we think of the pattern that we all know, sort of in the front, they lose a little at the forehead, and then a little bit right at the back. And that's the male pattern baldness, which is related to hormones and genetics. Women have a little bit of a different pattern, same cause really, but and that's the top of the head thins out.
Yeah.
So definitely there's some evidence for biotin and for Rogaine, which is topical minoxidil. And those are two things you can use over the counter that would help hair growth.
Well, Dr. Alexis Perlmutter, this hour went very quickly. How do people find out more about your practice?
You can go to my website.
Yes.
PerlmutterDermatology.com. And you'll see pictures of relatives of mine on there.
Oh, do you have to pay your relatives to do that?
No. Just force them. Mom, daughter. So, that's where you can find all about our practice.
Well, thanks a lot for being here. We'll see you next time. Support comes from the Eddie Memorial Senior Living Campus in Troy. Beechwood, for active, independent seniors, the Terrace at Eddie Memorial, providing assisted living, plus Eddie Memorial Geriatric Center, skilled nursing care, Eddie, EddySeniorLiving.com. Thanks again to Dr. Alexis Perlmutter for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Ed Rosen for screening the calls. Ed, thank you, thank you. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's time to head outdoors with the folks from the New York State DEC. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.